If you look at a map of where wind development has taken off in Idaho, you'll notice an area near American Falls. There, in the rolling agricultural land of southeast Idaho, Edith Kopp stands on a high hillside. She gazes out with satisfaction at more than a dozen turbines turning steadily.
You know, this is a pretty constant wind, and this isn't a very fast wind, but they're all going.
Kopp and her husband Richard have spent their lives right here, farming grain. For decades, they've planted in spring and harvested in summer. They've tallied profits and losses as winter sets in. The years have been marked by anxiety and hope.
Hopefully at the end of the year when you sell your crop, there'll be something left for you. In 33 years of marriage, there's been several of those years when there wasn't anything left for us.
She pauses and then says,
"This is the first time we've ever had a steady income."
That income is thanks to wind turbines, like the one that towers above us. A wind developer owns it, but the Kopps own this land. To them, the turbines mean royalty payments for the rest of their lives. This is the kind of story wind developers love to tout. Here in Idaho, clean and renewable wind energy is sustaining rural communities. But you don't have to go far to get a very different take. I'm standing on the roadside just out of town, and in front of me there's a billboard that reads Swindle. And in the word swindle, the letters W-I-N-D, spelling wind, are in red. And then below it, it says, not cheap, not clean, not for Idaho. The billboards are sponsored by a local anti-wind group called the Energy Integrity Project. They aren't the only opposition the industry has faced here. A proposed moratorium on wind development has won support from prominent legislators. Then there's Idaho Power's campaign. Through TV ads and leaflets, the state's largest utility has worked to spread a simple message. Wind power drives up electricity prices. So what's going on here? Why did Idaho welcome wind and then turn a cold shoulder? The answer is the story behind the story of Edith and Richard Kopp's wind turbines. And it has to do with a federal law you've probably never heard of.
PURPA.
I think it's important to understand how PURPA came to be.
The Public Utility Regulatory Policies Act of 1978, also known as PURPA. Peter Richardson practices energy and utility law in Boise.
Congress, when it passed PURPA, their goal was essentially national security, to help this country become energy independent.
Here's the context. It's the late 70s, and there's an energy crisis. Government wants to encourage independent power production, but there's a problem. The utilities control electricity generation. They're monopolies. They don't want to distribute power they don't produce. So here's what PURPA does. It makes utilities accept power from small independent projects. They don't have a choice. Now, fast forward 30 years. There's anxiety about climate change and job creation. Congress passes a tax credit for renewable energy production. Idaho passes a property tax exemption for wind producers. At the same time, wind turbines become a lot cheaper. Plus, PURPA is still there, telling utilities they have to accept power from small independent producers. Wind developers rush into Idaho, catching the state off guard. And that brings us to today.
The utilities are using this accident, this perfect storm that allowed for a very large amount of wind to be developed to put the kibosh on all PURPA projects.
Richardson represents many wind developers, and this is his view, that the utilities are trying to dismantle the mechanism that forces them to accept energy from small independent projects. He says the utilities want to protect their market power and their profits. No surprise, the utilities don't see it that way. Mark Stokes is the manager of power supply planning for Idaho Power.
I would not characterize it as us trying to dismantle PURPA. We're just trying to get the rates that we pay for this energy through these contracts to be a fair rate so that our customers aren't harmed.
Idaho Power has a couple of arguments. First, wind doesn't always blow and turbines don't always turn. For utilities, that varying supply can be hard to accommodate. Sometimes, Stokes says, Idaho Power winds up with way more energy than it needs.
We end up having to turn around and sell that energy back into the market because it's surplus, and we end up taking a big loss on that, which ultimately ends up impacting the rates of our customers.
Stokes and Richardson don't agree about much, but they both say one key thing. There's a rate set by the Idaho Public Utilities Commission that dictates how much utilities pay for the independent power they have to accept. Stokes and Richardson say that rate may, for a time, have been set too high. In other words, when wind developers looked around to see where they should build projects, they saw a special deal in Idaho. The utilities want a lot of changes to the way PURPL works in the state. Those include shorter contracts with independent energy producers and a different way to calculate rates. Richardson, the lawyer, says the utilities' proposals would shut wind developers out of the state.
Instead of turning the spigot on and off to allow new development when that's needed, they're basically blowing up the well.
These arguments are now before the Public Utilities Commission. It's expected to rule next month. Meanwhile, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission has already weighed in on one aspect of the case, coming down in favor of the wind industry. So what can we take away from all of this? Let's hear from one more person, Ben Otto of the Idaho Conservation League. He's a fan of clean energy, but he says Idaho hasn't approached it in the right way.
Business is just reacting naturally to what's placed before them. Here's a very lucrative thing. It's a limited time offer. We don't, get it now before we're out. And that's because we don't have a plan in the state.
The state does have a document called the Idaho Energy Plan, but Otto and other experts say it has little weight. Otto believes the state is left with a binge and purge cycle.
When the incentives are hot, everybody comes in. The incentives go down, everybody leaves.
A federal tax credit for wind power is set to expire in December, making this particular cycle even more dramatic. Now let's think back to the start of this story and to Edith Kopp standing under a turbine on a hillside near American Falls. Why did Idaho welcome wind farms and then change its tune? The answer is complicated. It's about state and federal policy and businesses looking for profit. And it's a case study in unintended consequences. For State Impact Idaho, I'm Molly Messick.